So we have some breaking news to share on the seeming disappearance of Chinese tennis star Peng Shuai. The president of the International Olympic Committee has issued a statement in which he said he has spoken with Peng. It happened in a video call earlier today.
The world has been asking, where is Peng Shuai? The Chinese tennis star had disappeared weeks ago after making sexual assault allegations against a man who was once one of the most powerful politicians in China. But all of it only raises more questions about what the price might be for speaking out. So today, ESPN's Dan Murphy shares his reporting on this complex, developing situation. Then we return stateside with our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, who helps us sort through the chaos of Week 11 in the NFL. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, November 22nd. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So we're here to talk about the case of Peng Shuai, Dan. This is a Chinese tennis champion who went missing earlier this month in China after a social media post that she'd put up accused a former Chinese government official of sexual assault. And we're talking now on Sunday afternoon, and I understand that there's new video of her, or at least an account of a video call that's emerged. So what's the latest here?
Yeah, that's right. Over the weekend, Peng Shuai has had a couple sort of public appearances. One was at a youth tennis championship in China. And the other was a video call she had with members of the International Olympic Committee, including Thomas Bach, who's the president of the IOC. And apparently they spoke for about 30 minutes, according to the IOC. And Peng assured all of them that she was safe and was looking for privacy. But the one main thing that continues to be missing from that call is there was no discussion, or at least the IOC didn't mention any discussion of her initial sexual assault allegations.
Yeah, it sounds like for all of the little bits of evidence that have been presented to us, there are still major questions, Dan, about her whereabouts and her safety. Is that right?
Yeah. So the Chinese government has shown through videos recently over the past few days that she is at least in China and well enough to be sort of out in public here and there. But it's not clear how much freedom she actually has, freedom of movement. She hasn't spoken directly to a camera that the public has seen beyond the IOC call at this point.
Yeah, so let's get into why these proof of life bits and pieces are even necessary here. Because a couple weeks ago, Peng posted an accusation that a powerful political figure in China, Zhang Kaoli, committed sexual assault against her. What did she say exactly?
So this all starts in early November when on her Weibo account, which is kind of like Twitter in China, she posted a long message saying that at one point she had a romantic relationship with this man who was among maybe the seven most powerful men in China before he retired, Zhang Kaoli, despite his being married. And then later, several years later, she was coerced into having sex with him against her will, she said in her initial post. Shortly after she posted that, it disappeared from the internet, and no one up until this week had heard from or seen her in public since then.
This guy, Zhang Kaoli, just give me a sense of how powerful he is in China.
So he was a vice premier, which is really the apex of a small group underneath President Xi Jinping, where there are about seven men who are right below the ultimate seat of power, which is the president.
Mm. And so for a woman to say this, Dan, this woman in specific, right? This is a former number one ranked player in women's doubles. This is a three-time Olympian for China. Tell me about Peng, her career and her fame in China and even beyond that.
Yeah, so she's 35 years old. She's been playing professional tennis for almost two decades at this point. And at the peak of her career, which was in, you know, right around 2010, 2011, 2012, she was one of the best, part of one of the best doubles teams in the world. They won Wimbledon, they won the French Open. She, you know, regularly checked in the top 20 or top 50 of the WTA rankings. So she was a major sports star in the country of China. And as you mentioned, I don't think it's possible to overstate how bold and courageous it is for somebody with this profile and level of visibility to accuse someone who is so powerful in the Chinese government of sexual assault.
Yeah, and Zhang Kaoli, what has he said for his behalf on the record about this?
Nothing. In fact, the Chinese government hasn't really addressed her claims at all. One of their sort of press secretaries was asked about it last week and basically said he wasn't aware of it and this isn't an issue of foreign concern. And remember, this is a country where you can get censored and even thrown in prison for something as posting like a meme that is derogatory toward the president or toward the government. And within the past couple of years, we've seen this pattern of high profile celebrity type people, both in the sports world, some real estate magnates, some actresses who, for one reason or another, are completely deleted from the Chinese internet. We saw this with one of the most popular men's soccer players in the country a couple of years ago, spoke up about some of the other human rights issues in China, and immediately his accounts were frozen and deleted, and no one's really heard much from him since. So it's not rare to see this. What is rare has been the response and how much international attention there is on it now.
So when this post goes up, Dan, how would you describe the reaction to that?
Well, there was a little bit of news coverage, and remember, it disappeared within minutes of her putting it up on the Chinese internet. It was a big enough deal where people managed to capture a screenshot of it and were chatting about it a little bit on different social media platforms, to the point where the Chinese government was censoring her name or censoring even posts about tennis to make sure that the conversation didn't get out of control. So it did get picked up internationally. There was a few stories about it, but it really wasn't too buzzworthy or people weren't paying too much of attention to it until this past week.
So the post is disappeared within minutes, and then Pong herself disappears, Dan. And the reaction to her just vanishing after speaking up in a way that caught the attention of the world, what happened there?
So last Sunday, Steve Simon, who's the CEO and chair of the Women's Tennis Association, made his first public statement about it. And the WTA was hosting their year-end finals event in Mexico. So most of the tennis community and the women's group was in Mexico together. And he shared the statement saying that nobody from that group had heard from Peng since she made her post on Weibo. And they were concerned for her safety and well-being. And they wanted some assurances from the Chinese government that she was okay.
Yeah, Dan, I've been staggered by the voice of the Women's Tennis Association here and the big names that have put pressure explicitly on the Chinese Communist Party on behalf of Peng. What do they want?
So the WTA and Steve Simon have asked for two main things. And the first is to make sure that Peng is safe and have a direct conversation with her. And then the second thing they want is they want the government to conduct a fair and transparent investigation into her claims of sexual assault, which is not something that you would normally expect from the Chinese government.
What's been surprising to you about the WTA's response and how clear those demands have been?
We don't see a lot of people ever call out publicly the Chinese government like this. The folks I've talked to say that frequently people will work kind of behind the scenes in a way that tries to help the Chinese government save face and reach some type of diplomatic solution. But to send messages this publicly and from superstars with millions of followers sharing this on social media now, Naomi Osaka, Serena Williams, Novak Djokovic.
Right. And so the financial risk here, Dan, on the part of the WTA and those stars across the world, what's the risk to them because they've done this?
Right. So for some of those stars, there are certainly endorsement dollars to be lost that they could be making in a huge market in China where women's tennis is growing more and more popular over the past decade. And the same goes for the WTA. This is an organization that probably does tens of millions of dollars of business on an annual basis in China. They've recently signed an unprecedented 10-year contract to hold their WTA finals, their big year-end, prized jewel event in Shenzhen, a Chinese city, every year. And Shenzhen committed to building a big stadium there. They doubled the prize money purse. It was a very big deal for the WTA to sign this. And Steve Simon has said very plainly that they are willing to take their ball and walk away if the Chinese government doesn't do what they want them to do.
So I want to get into the Chinese government seeming to try and appease its critics, its skeptics, the people who are concerned for Peng's safety. This proof that they've offered that she is alive, that she is free, that essentially all is well. Walk us through those. What was the first that we heard on that front from Peng?
It started in a way that a lot of human rights folks have described to me as ham-fisted or almost laughable. And they've gotten a little further down the line since then. But the first thing that they sent out was an email that was purportedly written by Peng that basically said, "I'm safe and the claims that I initially made a few weeks ago about sexual assault are untrue."
The email said the sexual assault allegations Peng previously made against a former top Chinese government official were not true and went on to say, "I am not missing, nor am I unsafe. I've just been resting at home and everything is fine."
Clearly, nobody was satisfied with that answer. So since then, they've released a couple photos of her and a couple videos of her appearing in public in Beijing.
Yeah, I'm looking at these photos that were undated, that were released by Chinese state media, Dan, on Peng's behalf, allegedly. And she's holding her cat surrounded by stuffed animals in one, smiling. She's holding a Kung Fu Panda doll in another. But the videos that then got released from a restaurant and then from a tennis tournament, how would you describe what we saw in those?
So I think China has increasingly on a day-by-day basis tried to show more verifiable proof that Peng is alive and well. And so in the past couple of days, we've seen her eating at a restaurant with a couple other men, and she's sitting, not speaking as part of the conversation as she sits there and eats. And then we saw her on Saturday at a youth tennis tournament in Beijing. You know, the very last thing that we've heard of was a video call that she had with several members of the Olympic Committee. Again, there's no proof that she is doing all of this of her own free will and that somehow she's not being having other freedoms curtailed in the meantime.
And so just to be 100% clear, in all of these bits of multimedia, how many mentions of those sexual assault claims have there been?
Zero.
And has Peng posted it all to her own social media accounts since all of this started?
No, those accounts all still seem to be frozen. In fact, if you try to search for her through a Chinese search engine right now, you won't get any results. You still won't see anything. You'll see things about her career from 5 or 6 years ago, but there's no mention of what's happened in the past few weeks anywhere to be found.
So all of this is also happening against the backdrop of the run-up to the Winter Olympics in Beijing. How does that shape this very fraught situation with Peng?
So there was already a lot of conversation going on in how athletes were going to respond to several human rights issues going on in China at the moment, whether it's in Hong Kong or with the Uyghurs. And I think that the response we've seen from the tennis community and the folks that I've talked to who track this kind of stuff wonder if the WTA's bold step of calling China out will encourage other athletes to somehow, you know, protest what's going on in China right now on a lot of different other fronts, whether that means a boycott of the games or making some kind of statement while they're there, drawing attention to the kind of things that the Chinese government very much does not want to be the main storylines while we're there at the Olympics.
So Dan, as this story that you called unprecedented continues to unfold here, what are your next steps as a journalist?
Well, I think some of the interesting questions left to be answered are when Peng will rejoin the tennis community in some way or even have contact with other people, because that still hasn't happened yet. So we'll continue talking to other people around the tennis world to figure out when and how she's able to communicate with others and get a better gauge of how much freedom she actually has. And then the other thing is, you know, the WTA has made some, I guess we can call them threats to pull out their business. So we'll continue to be checking in with the tennis community to see what they decide or when they make a decision on if they're going to pull out of there. And then lastly, I think we'll see how other athletes are going to respond to this and whether the fact that the WTA and some really big tennis stars have spoken up sort of clears the way or gives an off-ramp for athletes in all kinds of sports to start speaking up about what's going on with some of the human rights issue in China.
Dan Murphy, thank you for your reporting, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Pablo.
All right, coming up, we're going to change gears and get back to the NFL because Alex Smith is going to tell us what he saw that we didn't from a wild Sunday of games.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Testing. Yep. Recording. Okay. Well, it's the combination of the ironing board and is this a sheet or a towel? What is this? A towel?
It's like a comforter. It's a medium weight blanket that I found. Yeah, this is how podcasting is done professionally, Alex Smith. So, Alex, I have something I have to ask you, man. Like, you played in the NFL for 15 years or so. I wonder if you feel how I have felt while watching these games this season, which is, wow, I'm an idiot. Like, I don't know anything. I wonder if that sensation has also overwhelmed you at times as you've been doing this job with me here.
You know, I honestly couldn't agree with you more. I feel like this year has been absolutely insane. It just when I feel like I know a team or I know a tendency or I know a direction in the league or a division's heading, I feel like the very next weekend, it's like a complete punch in the face. Everything that I thought I knew about the game and these teams and these players. I mean, you and I mentioned, I think our last words on the last podcast were obviously the fact that Kansas City Dallas was going to be a shootout.
I said, take the over, I believe, explicitly.
Yep. Yeah. And I think, I mean, along with the entire country, and it's been like that this entire year, I do find it amazing. I thought watching football today was absolutely unreal. To be this late in the season and to not already know who's going to be these playoff teams, right? I think they're all up for grabs on both sides of the ball. There is no dominant team at this point.
Right.
You know, I think it makes for great, great entertainment. It is a little chaotic and humbling for sure.
yeah. A lot of chaotic and extraordinarily humbling. Because, Alex, just to throw some numbers at you, just to validate how our feelings have gone, 23 games now have been decided on the final play. That's the most times that's happened through 11 weeks since the merger in 1970. 47 different quarterbacks have started since week 8. This is wild. And it's almost unprecedented. And we go now to the game that you just alluded to, Dallas at Kansas City, because we didn't get a shootout. We got the Chiefs winning 19-9, and the story here was not Patrick Mahomes, your former backup, but the defense of Kansas City, dude. Like, one of the shakiest units in the league somehow shut down the highest scoring offense in the NFL. What did you see here? How did they do this?
This was absolutely awesome to watch in that regard. I mean, this was a defense that halfway through the season was historically terrible. I mean, they were on pace to maybe break records as far as bad defense goes. And over the last 3 weeks, I mean, something clicked, they turned a corner. I mean, the Cowboys are number one in every statistical category there is. I mean, they're putting up almost 450 yards of offense a game, almost 32 points a game, and absolutely shut them down.
Yeah, back to Prescott. Chiefs, now the pass is over the middle, picked off! Legarius Sneed will cap off a terrific night for the Chiefs defense.
It does come back, just like we talked about, I think, time and time again, is it starts with the defensive line. I mean, they had 5 sacks. They created 3 turnovers, pestering Dak all day. The DBs made plays when they had to. Chris Jones was a problem today to be dealt with.
4-man rush. Chiefs push the pocket again. They hit Prescott. They'll sack Prescott. A 5-sack performance by the Chiefs. Chris Jones just bringing the heat, and the Cowboys can do nothing about it.
Oh, my gosh. 3.5 sacks.
Even the interception at the end, he gets his hands on. He is a large human being. Frank Clark finally getting in the mix, had a sack fumble. And that's kind of what we need to see. Those are two guys that obviously are premier playmakers for that defense that we weren't talking about them early in the year. And rightfully so, the way they played today and the performance they put on was absolutely dominant. Big, big statement win for that side of the ball. And Kansas City is slowly creeping along here. I mean, I think for as much as we've talked about them not being themselves, at this point, I mean, I think trending in the right direction.
Yeah, so look, The AFC, I mean, top to bottom, is just incredibly confusing. And I turned to what we saw in Buffalo. Like, the Buffalo Bills, Alex, I mean, they got blown out at home by the Colts 41-15. And look, you've been somebody who's had far more faith in Indianapolis than me basically the whole season. But what I saw out of Jonathan Taylor.
He's going to turn, give off to Jonathan Taylor. Stood up at the one, falls forward. There's five of them. Number five, Jonathan Taylor.
Scoring five touchdowns against the best defense in the league by the advanced metrics here, man. How did they do this?
I mean, you said it. I mean, it's one thing to have a day like this in the NFL, but to do it against the number one defense from a yards per game and a scoring perspective, this and a Bills front that, I mean, they are stout. And they got absolutely dominated today by the Colts. The Colts are playing big boy football these last few weeks.
Oh, it was demoralizing. No, I mean, the Bills, man, just it just, I mean, Alex, look, I just wonder what it's like when you're in a game and you are just physically, you're little brothered. You're stuffed into a locker, right? You're getting pantsed over and over again.
And he did. I mean, and they were the bully. The Bills defense, I mean, this was the bully of the AFC. And I mean, the Colts had 46 rushing attempts today. I mean, that's crazy. Incredibly dominant. And again, I think this time of year, I mean, the Colts trending, there's certainly a couple games. You look at their record, and I know they wish they had a couple back from earlier in the year. They played close and should have won. So, yeah, I totally agree with you. The AFC is wide open. A lot of good teams. I mean, and again, I think the Colts and Patriots are two teams that nobody wants to see right now.
Well, the Patriots now sitting atop the AFC because, of course, right? But the free fall that you mentioned, like Josh Allen, the plunge that he has taken, like Alex, it's worth noting this. He started the week as the MVP favorite in Vegas, ahead of Tom Brady, ahead of Dak. Now, that whole thing is topsy-turvy. What you saw from Josh Allen today under center, how do you begin to describe what he's going through?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of like their entire offense. They're searching. You know, there's nothing they can hang their hat on. I think with the Bills, they have no idea what that is. I mean, we've seen their inability to run the football. They have amazing talent, especially on the perimeter, but it's all kind of hit or miss. They can't seem to ever get into a rhythm. And Josh Allen, I think it goes hand in hand with that. I mean, I think we've seen him make incredible plays, but at the time he seems to be pressing. He's thrown a couple of really bad interceptions today. They had a bunch of turnovers, you know, and we'll see at this point. Again, they haven't beat any great teams.
No. You look at the resume, Alex, and suddenly you're like, wait a minute, were they ever that good? And that's kind of the question that, I mean, look, Josh Allen had an incredible season, right? But that's in the past now. Now we're wondering, well, how good is he going to be? And that's, I mean, these are questions, Alex, right, that we also are suddenly asking in Tennessee. I mean, all across the top of the AFC, I mean, that's a team, the Titans, that won six straight, who suddenly wound up never leading at home against one of the worst teams in the whole sport, in the Texans. Which, again, I mean, this is not just a bad loss. It's an embarrassing loss, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Titans absolutely laid an egg today. I mean, the Titans probably had the best resume in all of football. I mean, six straight wins. I think they've beaten five playoff teams from last year. They have losses to the Texans and the Jets. I mean, talk about Jekyll and Hyde. And today was, I think this is one of those games. This is one of those on to Cincinnati games. Press delete, erase this, bury it, do whatever you want to do, move on. I mean, they had five turnovers today. They still only held the Texans, I think, to under 200 yards of offense. I mean, it's not like the Texans played amazing. Certainly, I think the Titans kind of gave this one away. Tannehill, obviously, I think, wants a bunch of those back, four picks. You just can't overcome something like that. And today looked bad, right? I mean, bad on the offensive side. I still think they haven't totally answered the question since Derrick Henry's injury on what they're going to be on the offensive right side of the ball. And I know their philosophy isn't necessarily that. They're week to week winning games and matchups, and I appreciate that. And I think Tannehill's a great player. But, like, obviously Julio's out. A.J. Brown played banged up today. They got to find their identity a little bit on that side of the ball. And it was hard to do, obviously, with all those turnovers. So they never really had a chance.
So when we look at Packers-Vikings, Alex, right? A game between another one seed in the Green Bay Packers, top of the NFC, losing to the Vikings 34-31. I mean, this was one of those games that was a super fun back and forth kind of welterweight, and I would say title fight, but I don't know if the Vikings are a title contender. Like, what was your sense of watching this? What did you learn about the Green Bay Packers? Let's start there.
Yeah, this was the game of the day. If you like football, if you like scoring, you like offenses, quarterbacks, receivers, I mean, man, today was that game was absolutely ridiculous to watch in a good way. It's kind of what I think we thought Kansas City Dallas would look like.
Yes.
I mean, I know you mentioned what there were 23 1-point games or last play of the game, you know, coming into the year. I think the Vikings have, you know, 8 of those.
Yeah.
You better get ready for a dogfight when you play the Vikings. And Kirk Cousins has quietly had one of the best seasons in football. I mean, when you look at his numbers, and I know
it's so startling, it's like, Alex. It's so startling to hear
like
you
people
say that.
Like love him or hate him. You know, he's a polarizing guy a little bit on and off the field, but he is playing really, really good football. And I know some people want to crush him on kind of the checkdown thing and not taking a lot of risks. But he went punch for punch with Aaron today. Obviously got a little bit of a gift at the very end.
Cousins has a lot of time. Airing it out deep for Jefferson. It's intercepted! Savage has it!
The pass was incomplete.
I think the Vikings at this point, you know, when we get past those five teams, are they're right there next. You know, like I said, you better get ready for you better get ready to compete to the final whistle with these guys. I think, you know, here as the season goes on, this could certainly become a strength of theirs.
Yeah, I'm looking through their schedule and I'm like, okay, I'm counting the number of games that have been decided by more than a touchdown, and the number that I'm seeing is one.
I think it's
they
one.
Have played exactly one game, win over the Seahawks. And that brings me to the last thing I want to talk to you about, actually, Alex, because what we saw from the Cardinals-Seahawks game, right? Let's all hail the Arizona Cardinals, the new one seed in the NFC, now the only 9-win team in the NFL. They didn't just beat the Seahawks on the road, Alex, 23-13 behind your old friend, another one of your former backups, Colt McCoy. They did it with Colt McCoy throwing for 328 yards and 2 touchdowns, again filling in for Kyler Murray, doing all of this at age 35. How did this game make you feel?
I loved it. You know, I played several years with Colt. I know him really, really well. And I love this for the Arizona. I mean, this is two big wins now. They have missed two of their premier players, Kyler and Hop, these last several weeks. Colt has gone in there and 2 out of 3 weeks played lights out. I mean, lights out, not serviceable. I mean, he's going in and he's the reason they've won, and they've won two big division games. They are built differently. I think it starts with Colt, but then on the defense, this defensive unit is really, really impressive. I think they're for real. They've been consistent all year. Seattle couldn't get anything going today on offense, even with Russ, obviously, 2 weeks back.
Wow.
Seattle is in 15th place in the NFC. I mean, I don't know who could have called that going into this season, but that is where we are right now. 15th there and second to last in the whole NFC. Crazy to say. And with that, again, hats off to Arizona. I mean, they have really turned the corner, I think, as a football team. And then again, really happy for Cole, man, to step up. You know, when you're the backup and you don't know when your opportunities are going to come, and here he's had a little run, and to hold up your end and to play at a high level, I know means a lot to him. I know he puts in a ton of time, works incredibly hard, and is really talented and got to show it off again today.
Yeah, he beats the Niners in week 9. He beats the Seahawks in week 11. And just so people understand, Alex, like how you and Colt go back. I mean, you guys, you were the quarterbacks. You're the top 2 quarterbacks on the Washington football team. You obviously have the injury that has completely changed your life. It's been documented extensively everywhere. Go find the Project 11 documentary that we did if you want more on that. But like, I remember reading, Alex, that there was in that process, like you in a hospital room dealing with the infection from your leg, and then Colt McCoy is somehow in the room next door, like with his own thing. What was that about?
So I, obviously I broke my leg and you know, infection set in and ended up spending over almost a month in the hospital. Well, 2 weeks later, Colt breaks his fibula against the Eagles. Mm. And so he ends up in the hospital and has to have surgery. And he is in, he's like in the hospital. He's in the room, like down the hall. And he came to visit me at that one point. You know, 2 weeks later is kind of when I was still at its worst. He came and visited me in like the ICU when I was in there. And then I got some good photos off to send them to you, him and I in the hospital together. But
please,
yeah, it's happy to see him back. Like injuries obviously are such a crummy part of the game. And, you know, he had complications himself, I know, through the recovery process. So pumped to see him back rolling.
And Alex, I just got to imagine that Colt McCoy doing this with the Cardinals to the Seahawks and you doing this with a guy trapped underneath a comforter being held up by an ironing board in order to podcast, that those are both pretty clear examples of two guys just living the dream.
Nope, couldn't have imagined in my wildest dreams, but that's life, right? Like that's what's so amazing about this. The best part is definitely the ironing board and the sheet. I hope everybody can come check this out at some point. But no, you know, it's fun. I've enjoyed this so much, but obviously to, you know, put your analysis hat on for me and to critique these guys. But it's been a tough year, been a bit of a roller coaster. But enjoyed it every week.
Yeah. Alex Smith, I have good news for you and bad news. This roller coaster ain't over, man. So I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, likewise. Have a good Thanksgiving, everybody.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'm going to take a couple days off here for Thanksgiving break, but Emily Kaplan, the great Emily Kaplan, is going to be your host. So enjoy.